Merciful God! In what a frightful condition was the country at that time. I speak now of the north of Ireland. It was there, indeed, the seat of Orange ascendancy and irresponsible power. To find a justice of the peace, not an Orange man, would have been an impossibility. William Carleton, Autobiography, 1869.
The poor Irishman lives in the simple house of his childhood, with the well-known neighbours and faces. They warmly welcome him. He is barefoot again. Walt Whitman, The Sleepers, Leaves of Grass, 1855.
From a corner, from above the paraffin tins, I hoisted a black and white sign of mouldering wood. John Montague, prop. Now, small head of the household, I hauled out the shutters each evening to board up the shop and post office with panels larger than myself. Singing in the summer twilight when the job was done, singing to my weary aunts, singing to the wild lynches across the way, singing to the clerks on the next block, singing to the cows in their stalls, singing to the pigs in their crow, singing to the hens settling onto their roosts, singing to old Tim clopping in his stable. October winds lament around the castle of Dromore, but peace is in her lofty halls, my dearest treasure stored. A solitary minstrel of family dreams, with my private menagerie of ghosts and animals, my unbroken boy soprano breaking the membrane of the gloaming, that sign of ownership at my feet, John Montague, prop. Dread spirits of the Blackwater, Clan Owen's wild banshee. My grandfather comes riding by. I see his glorious long beard as he sits in his sidecar or jaunts in his pony and trap. He hails me.
But John, that was always my name, look at that wooden sign. Yet you may carry it on. And please, keep singing. I heard you summon Clan Owen's wild banshee. She has always followed our family. Take time to thrive, my ray of hope, in the gardens of Dromore. Take heed, young eaglet, till your wings are feathered, fit to soar.
Take time to thrive, my ray of hope, in the gardens of Dromore. Take heed, young eaglet, till your wings are feathered, fit to soar. He cracks his reins and disappears. A bare-legged boy, I crouch on my creepy stool on the edge of the reddening hearth and stare up the open chimney to where, through turf smoke, I spy clouds like galleons coursing by, or scramble up the stairs to where a windowless room shelters the remnants of his library. The candle flame trembles as I read, rocking in his cushioned chair as if John Montague, J.P., were still there, pondering his many volumes instead of me, a Brooklyn urchin troubling his air. In my grandfather's library there were many volumes, Bibles massive as flagstones, heavy print my eye could trawl along, the thunder of the Old Testament. I climbed the mount with Moses, stood in the presence of the Lord, or listened as he spake from a cloud. For lo, I had suffered the long exodus from Brooklyn and New York, where they worshipped the golden calf, which now staggers, newly born, rasped clean by its mother's tongue on the cobblestones of our farmyard. I chanted the Proverbs and Psalms, and later bathed in the Song of Songs. Thy love is headier than wine, honey and milk lie under thy tongue, thy lips drip as the honeycomb. To what dark-eyed maiden might I yet sing such a song? Lily of the valley, Rose of Sharon. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John blessed the bed I lay upon. My grandfather's bed in my grandfather's room, but I loved the revelations of yet another John. He of Patmos, a woman clothed with the sun, a two-horned lamb who spoke like a dragon. Locusts with breastplates of iron, the heads of the horses as heads of lions. The apocalypse, God's horror comic, like the scary film with Boris Karloff I had seen on my last day in Brooklyn and can remember as the rats scamper above the damp blotched wallpaper in the shadowy rafters over my head. The beams of our house are cedar and our rafters of fir. John Whale's House of the Dead, seen by a small boy, now transplanted. Christmas stars stud the sky as in my grandfather's bed I lie.
What are you doing in my bedroom? Plundering my library? Perusing my will? Where the devil did you come from?
John begat James, who begat John. Why did you sire so many children, you old goat with luxuriant beard and sideburns? I am second generation, fruit of your loins, who has come from afar to dwell with your two maiden daughters, your eldest Bridget, your youngest Winifred, in that rural empire you founded.
Like Ruth, amid the alien corn.
Except I was born in Depression, Brooklyn, a raucous place you have never seen, with clanging trolleys and lurid neon.
So you were born in America, where they had that terrible civil war, Mar of the Sword, at Fredericksburg, where over 1,000 Irish died, sporting their sprigs of green. Look at those photographs of slaughtered soldiers, arranged by Matthew Brady, next to Whitman, in my library.
With Butler's Lives of the Saints and Vasari's Lives of the Artists. At least you were Catholic in your tastes.
And in my thoughts. Cardinals Wiseman and Manning conducting their lofty debates around the Immaculate Conception. Ponderous and Victorian to you, perhaps. Though Catholic, I serve the Queen as postmaster and lay magistrate. A bleak land after the famine. No need to read the Riot Act. White gloves often on the bench. A small cog in the imperial machine. The greatest empire ever seen.
And lo, led your people out of Egypt. Downhill, that is, from Alta Muscan and Alta Clochan to this broad road that sweeps from Derry to Belfast. Years later, in troubled dreams, I hear ghostly carriages rumble past. My grandfather's clock was too tall for the shelf, so he spent 50 years in the bed going tick-cock, tick-cock, until he stopped short, never to go again in Garvahy graveyard. Many years without slumbering, tick-cock, tick-cock, many children engendering. I saw his grave dug open to admit another daughter, sired in that same iron bed I now occupy, listening to the rodents rustling overhead. His thigh bone seemed enormous, large as the jawbone of an ass. But I was only an altar boy, clothed in mystic surplice and soutane over New World knickerbockers, to serve her funeral mass before the fresh clods struck the coffin, brass handles, polished wood. Remember, man, that thou art dust, and into dust thou shalt return.
That ditty should have stuck in your throat. Why must you strike such a vulgar note? Without me, you would not even exist, so a little courtesy would not go amiss.
Listen, you old fecker, you may be my grandfather, but the round world has rolled on since then.
And completely lost its manners.
You had cardinals, Manning, Wiseman, Newman, ruminating over the Immaculate Contraption. My heroes were Tiger Flowers and Slapsy Maxie Rosenblum, and then the Brown Bomber and Billy Conn. Livelier than your solemn red-hatted procession. Did you never play stoop ball? Put nickels under trolley or tram?
Brash as an American. You don't sound like my grandson, or even an Ulster man. Do you know Newman's definition of a gentleman? A gentleman is one who never inflicts pain. Study that for a while. Then speak to me again. Besides, large families were common then.
But what would your poor wife have to say? But who was my grandmother? Silence, or almost. Her name, I learnt, was Quinn, pronounced locally Queen. The robust one of several sisters, afflicted with consumption, wasting away slowly, slowly, in the house across from our own. The Lynches and I played in its ruins, wrestling in our dungarees amid swollen grain sacks as bats looped through broken windows, unaware of where we were, walls blighted by illness, now shrunken to a storehouse for horses, cattle, hay. And I have only one photograph of a tightly corseted woman. She unlaced them ritually for my grandfather's embrace in this same iron bed, night after patriarchal night, until she died in childbirth. A grandparent myself, I say a word for her now, a silent, solemn figure lost in the shadows of a doomed place, before she crosses the road through the portals of our house into male energy and merriment. In my grandmother's time, one woman was queen of the known world, another virgin queen of the unknown. So, shall I name her our lost queen, our lady of shadows, our lady of shall not? A patient figure at her spinning wheel, without whom I would not have been.
Out of the darkness, I dare to speak. I am not the silent queen of Garvahi and Ottoclocken. I am not a plaster saint. I am not a figurine. If my John can speak across a century's silence, why should I stay mute? I was a flesh and blood woman, the strongest of my house, so do not distill me into dream. But how the men were spoilt, grouped in the parlour, scarcely bothering to lift their plates to help us when we served, daunting like sucking calves as we ladled out their portions. Then back to the talk and drink again.
And abashed, I recall a rare flash of anger from Aunt Bridget. All the men together playing cards and drinking whiskey while we hungry children cried. Whitman saw Ireland, an ancient sorrowful mother, once a queen, now lean and tattered.
Will you have a tither of wet, man? Or I'll push you before me bosom. There were mouths agape, bottoms to clean, cows to milk and churns to turn, a hearth crook heavy with pots and pans, farls of soda and wheaten bread. I was more able than most men, though I left all the gabble to them. And you seem to forget. I loved my John. He was a fine figure of a man, handsome as Victoria's German one. Did you know that every night in Windsor, Albert's clothes were laid out on the bed and she slept with his picture over her head? She presided over her unfurling world, India, Africa, the Crimea and Khartoum, as I presided over mine, Garvahi, Ottoclocken, pressing the treadles of my sewing machine. So wasn't I happy to have my John and that lively bunch of children? And wasn't he the great scholar, the only a class of hedge schoolmaster?
That scringe of chalk on slate.
He was so pleased when Cousin Joseph became a cardinal with his book on Prophet John. And who are you anyway, you whippersnapper, sharing our family secrets with the world? So I say again, have a tither of wit, man.